Everyone loves the buzz. We love Wreck-It Ralph. We love the Herald Sun, all those things on Fox Footy as well. And he looks very sharp in his suit on a Friday and a Saturday, and he's back again with us on a Tuesday morning. Buzz, good morning.
Hello, gentlemen. Always good when Carlton is in crisis from a news point of view. There's always a million exploding angles in every direction.
Yes, seemingly there's a bit going on up there at Icon Park, just up the road from us, John. And we were talking earlier this morning while he was talking about the fact that the review has been brought forward, whether or not that's a good sign or a bad sign. The urgency of this seemingly has got a bit more heat in it than normal mid-year reviews, John.
No doubt about that. Look, Luke Sane has always had the reputation as a ball burster from way back. And look, there were just too many influential figures and past greats whispering in his ear not to do something significant about it. So look, you know, it has to be bad news for David Teague. And at least news for significant change. You know, when Mark Lagudajay and Kane Little had so emphatically backed David Teague, it was very difficult for the club to do anything but just to suggest that he would be their coach for 2022. So Luke Sayers comes in. Of course, he's not officially in the chair, but he's launched this external review, as Mark Robinson has revealed that there's an internal review of well from the football department top down. And look, I just think it's really hard to think that there's anything that they do in the male program that's actually elite right now. Tactical, development, leadership. You know, I know we've had the argument about whether Ross Lyon or Damien Hardwick or one of the elite coaches would have had multiple wins more than that, therefore, 8 record. But what it will do is it'll mean they never waste a crisis. If it is that they believe that David Teague needs to be moved on, that's exactly what they do. And if it is that they believe that he still has something good about him or even potentially great about him, that they replace him with, you know, multiple senior assistant coaches. I've threw up the likes of Mark Williams. I think is exactly what they need as a senior assistant in terms of skill acquisition and development and kicking, but it allows them to do whatever they want to do, and that potentially means sacking their coach.
So it's not just the single point of reference, which is often the case when clubs are in crisis, that the senior coach is the fall guy for everything. There's seemingly, from what you're saying and from what the indications are with this external review, that there is bigger problem at the Blues, almost a bit systemic for the last little while.
Yeah, well, I think that's what a review explores, and certainly you shouldn't go into a review, you know, having preordained ideas. But you know, I always think about when Peter Jackson took over at Melbourne, and he says, "Okay, what are we elite in? You know, what are we in the top four in terms of our staff, in terms of our personnel, in terms of our coaches?" And I don't think there's that much right now. Like obviously off field, they are humming and Kane Little's done an incredible job, but this team is way too talented to be 4-8 and to be losing to a waffle side in West Coast, and to just say, "Oh yeah, we have to get a little bit better." I mean. You know, I look at someone like Sam Walsh. I mean, you've got one of the players who might be the best midfielder in the game at some stage. I always remember when Chris Judd went back to West Coast there and he was a Carlton fan, and he said, "I had to strap my shoulders because I've been lifting you blokes for so long." I just think, what would Sam Walsh be thinking right now about this team? Where he's self-driven. His fitness levels are elite. His skill acquisition has improved. He wasn't a great kick, but he's become a very good one. And he's just surrounded by blokes who are just rolling through their careers. So I think the other decision they'll have to make is on Charlie Curnow. He is in full training. He's maybe 4 to 6 weeks away. I think he'd want to play. I think the club will want to play him, you know, for a bit of morale and a bit of PR. I think if they're really canny and they're really, you know, savage on themselves, they think the best chance of Charlie Curnow playing football for the next 6 or 8 years is probably another 6 months of rehab. And yet that's probably an unpopular view. So I just think they're a club that needs to make really brutal decisions on the best thing, even if it's not the most popular thing.
Well, they're not afraid of making brutal calls. They've done that in the past. David Teague, Ralphie, he's coached 40 matches for 17 wins and 23 losses. He took over halfway through a season and gave the Blues some optimism with the way that they played. His first full year is through a pandemic, and then he starts a new season where they have one of the draws from hell to be 4-8 at halfway or just after halfway. Is it fair on David Teague? This criticism?
Probably not, but I mean, he did accept the coaching job at Carlton, which, as you just said, is fairly ruthless. And look, I think if he was Brendan Bolton, if he had taken a club that was deep in a rebuild, but this was a club that, you know, it was supposed to be the coronation of everything that they'd worked hard for 6 or 7 years. So that's why there's a level of frustration, and I think there is a speed about this. You know, we have got, you know, two of the best defenders in the game. We have got two of the best midfielders in the game. You know, we've got Harry Mackay, who is just doing extraordinary things. So we've got the nucleus of talent, and yet it's the way they're losing. It's the, you know, it's the manner in which there's not any defensive system. You know, as I wrote in, you know, today's paper, the fish rots at the head. You know, it's Patrick Cripps is the one who's not doing the defensive running. You know, We have seen it with Melbourne halfway through last year when they were 3-5, and since then they've won 17 of 21 games. No one's suggesting Carlton's capable of that. You know, we saw it with Richmond at the end of 2016. And so I think what this review is about is not getting to the midway point of next year and saying, let's just sack the coach. It's actually getting ahead of it and being proactive and potentially making changes that will get David Teague as a senior coach back on track. It doesn't mean they sack him, but it certainly gives them the option of sacking him.
So what's a pass mark for Carlton at the moment? They're 4-8. What would have been acceptable for there not to be a review brought forward?
Let's call it 6-6, but more to the point, let's call it what Essendon is doing, which is huge spirit amongst the players, a really identifiable system, a development pathway that's seen Nick Cox, the rising star, but could have easily been Archie Perkins. We know that that they've got other kids coming through like Harry Jones. So all of those things at Essendon, they're really identifiable to the fans and also to the club. Whereas I think at Carlton, it seems muddled right now. Now, I've got Luke Power in as their development boss, but who's really improved at Carlton? I mean, that's an identifier that I always think of as a coach. Now, Mackay definitely has taken steps. Walsh has taken steps as well, but it's pretty hard across the board to see who is improving. And I think at any of those touch points, you'd say that Carlton hasn't improved as a club this year.
So, Buzz, just on some of those young players with talent, and another one who's been around a little while, but Cripps and Mackay, is it harder for them to commit to the club now that this is going on?
I still think Cripps has wedded to this football club, and he said many times, the greatest satisfaction I'll ever get is from seeing us at the bottom and then getting us to the top. So, look, everything that I hear about him and everything I listen to him is no. But Mackay is certainly seen by a lot of people, including those at North, and they know the family really well, as someone who will want to get every dollar out of his contract. Now, players absolutely are able to do that and probably should do that. But, it's why he's been linked to clubs like Essendon. It's why there will be suitors for him. Now, he was always going to sit down through the bye with his manager, David Trotter, and then Trotter would talk to the club. But, there's certainly going to be huge offers for him. I suppose my only issue with those kind of trades is it's all very well to say Essendon are interested in him. So, okay, Carlton say, okay, we need 3 first-round picks, and we also need, Zach Reid. They're almost impossible to get done, those deals. So I still think he'll stay there, but I don't think he's necessarily staying for the cut-price rate.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the problem for Carlton and Harry Mackay. I hope he stays at the football club, but the problem's going to be, with all the money they've spent on the players to bring into the football club, the demands, the price demands that Mackay is placing on himself means that it's going to put a hell of a lot of pressure on that football club and the cap for a team that's not playing in the finals.
Yeah, and I think it's really similar at St Kilda and Brad Hill. I mean, they got Brad Hill in because, he was the player they needed. But as soon as he's on 850, I mean, it's just natural. I mean, within every workplace, you're looking around and you say, that girl or that bloke is on that for what his output is. And it's immediately a market correction. And so, it's similar at Carlton where Mitch McGovern and also, clearly, other players. Adam Sard's only on about 600, 650. It's not massive wage, but, quite clearly Zach Williams is on a massive whack for what he's producing. And, again, I got that wrong. I thought that he could be a midfielder. He's not right now. They make bold decisions when they backfire. There are repercussions from them.
I don't think he's fit enough at this stage to be that role that they want him, so they're giving him a hybrid role at the minute from what I can see. What about the Saints? Speaking of cash and some concerns, have they got some concerns this week too?
Yeah, they have, yeah. Look, from the AFL last night, they're really working hard to get St Kilda into Cairns, but it could potentially be a bridge too far. Now, it may well be that the Queensland government allows them some really specific protocols, but, the players are in Sydney. They're not in a bubble like the Geelong players are in down at Cadinia Park. And so it seems at this stage as they will not be able to go to Cairns. Now, the fallback position is probably Giant Stadium. So, look, we had, 3,700, charitably on Friday night. So it's an $800,000 game for them in Cairns with the Queensland, the Bureau of Tourism and all of the corporates up there. It's a club with $13.8 million of debt. A club that this year was going to clear that debt because they were going to get fantastic crowds at Marvel Stadium. We look at Melbourne and the fact that they would have lost or got a profit or loss from these 2 weeks. They've done really well to get a corporate deal with the SCG and with the New South Wales Tourism Bureau. But, it's a massive financial hit for St Kilda in a year in which they had hoped to make millions of bucks and clearly won't be able to do that. And so, this is not a club that's going to clear its debt. And again, if the Tasmanian experience, becomes something where someone wants to relocate, from a financial point of view, St Kilda is absolutely at the front of the queue and well ahead of the likes of North Melbourne, who others will always want to push down there.
So What are the parameters that St Kilda don't meet, Buzz? I mean, New South Wales are going to play Origin tomorrow night in Townsville, coming from New South Wales, funnily enough. Why couldn't St Kilda get to Cairns if they're in Sydney?
What they should be saying is that, you know, this is a club that's been in New South Wales for the better part of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have daily COVID tests. We will fly in and fly out with a hard bubble. I think so much of this stuff is posturing. I mean, the issue with Geelong right now having to be in 60 hours of quarantine, it's absolutely draconian. It's farcical. But we sort of have to do it because the governments have had so many liberties or given to them or vice versa by the AFL. So, all we can say right now is that Secura is pessimistic about playing that game, but it doesn't mean that won't change in the next 40 hours. They desperately need it when it's worth the better part of $1 million.
I just don't know how that works when there's a like-for-like situation with New South Wales going to play in the NRL. Doesn't make any sense.
No.
I'd like you to have a chat to the Queensland Premier today, Buzz, and throw that question to her.
Get on it.
Yeah, okay, see what I can do. But that's your job. What about while we're talking about the Saints, the Max King, Jack Higgins conversation from the weekend? They were unhappy with the way that it was portrayed, the Saints, seemingly, with Simon Lethlean ringing some media outlets to have a conversation about that. Is it a bit over the top, or was it warranted, you reckon?
Oh, I think it's totally over the top. Just the background to that, I think that I had a quick chat to Gary Lyon yesterday. I think Simon Lethlean, the St Kilda football boss, had a lot of St Kilda people complaining to him about, you know, the assessment of Max King and whether he was, you know, producing or not. So I think he just called Fox Footy just to say, hey, look, what was said, so I can clarify it myself. And I think he and Gary had a chat, and I think he was pretty cool with it all. But, you know, I think if clubs are going to hide injuries in regards to their players, and then we're going to criticise them, and then they're going to come out the next day and say, well, you can't criticise this player. I mean, that's just, if you decide to, you know, you need to give us transparency. Otherwise, we're going to criticise them on their output. I think the Missy Higgins stuff, that's just a funny headline. You know, for me, I think the media, you know, in the most part, and there's big exclusions, but in the most part, they've been pretty good in terms of their assessment of mental health and being really sensitive to it. There's a lot of players out there with mental health issues that we have not reported on when we've known because of that sensitivity. But sport's about winning and losing. And when you lose, there is going to be scrutiny to it. Now, we always hear those players say, I'm the biggest critic of myself. Except then when we see a headline like Missy Higgins, people complain, nah, give us a spell. That was just that's what sub-editors do. They create silly headlines, and sometimes they're a bit harsh, and sometimes they have a little bit of truth about it, but that's why they're so good.
I think the interesting thing about Max King is that there's almost an obsession about him being the next Nick Revolt now, rather than actually let him grow into the role. He's only played 29 games. So I feel that the pressure of expectation on him is so big. Now, whether that's been caused by the media, caused by the footy club, I'm not entirely sure. But there does seem to be a very heavy obsession about him.
Well, we did nickname him Winks. So, I mean, there is a little... I think that the media is not totally blameless over that. So Whitey, here's the question. So he's on significant money under his new contract. You know, there's been a lot of speculation, you know, maybe it's $800,000 or more. Does the size of a contract and the fact that he has a meaningful role within that team, does that give us more, you know, carte blanche potentially to criticise if he doesn't perform?
I think a little bit of that. I think it's interesting when you compare the two brothers, because Ben's had that extra year because Max had the knee injury. So what we're seeing from Ben in year three is what potentially we'll see from Max King next year. So Ben King's kicked, I can tell you the stats because they've got in front of me, 74 goals from his 2.5 seasons. Max King, 36 goals from his 1.5 seasons. I mean, this is the thing, is that you can't compare the two of them because the one's got an extra year of footy in front, you know. And the other part about it is that I just think that the comparison with Revolt having the number 12, you made the comment about the nickname, I just think that we're judging him a lot harsher for someone that's just starting his career, whereas someone like Oscar Allen's been able to develop naturally. Now, he wasn't quite as high a pick as what King was, but he's still in the top 25. But he's kind of had Kennedy and Darling around him, and he's sort of grown naturally, and all of a sudden, whoa, this guy's a good player. Whereas with Max King, I think there's been this, I almost say, obsession about him since he started.
Yeah, and I think, I know David King was critical of the commentary by, I think, Gary Lyon and John Brown. I listened to it all. I thought that there was a heavy emphasis on it. But I think what they continued to say is not that he needed to take the game by the scruff of the neck, just that he needed to make more contests, that if he was going to be the player that he was going to become, he needed to hit some more packs. And look, that's what those guys are paid for. you know, we very often don't get it right. So, look, I understand that there's a balance there, but I just felt in that situation that they weren't asking him to go and kick eight. They were just saying, we need you to get to contest. And as it turned out, there was a valid reason why he wasn't getting there. And so, yeah, I think the football club, you know, if they'd had their druthers, might have been a bit more accountable there. And, you know, maybe those guys might have focused on other players as well who played 200 games. And I think that's a fair call.
I think that with Max King particularly, it's a little bit like a racehorse that's just starting out, that we want him to be the next champion of the game.
So there you go with Winks again. There you go with Winks.
There is almost that emotional investment of almost barracking for him to be the player that we'd want him to be rather than the player that he is at the moment. I feel that that's the case with Max King potentially, that, you know, he's the messiah sort of guy that's going to be the next guy to kick 100 goals in a season, all these sorts of things, because we've seen glimpses of it. But for, as I said before, for someone in his second year coming off a knee reconstruction, I just think he's going to take time.
Yeah, and I think all I would say, I couldn't agree more with that. All I would say about the goal kicking and why there's some scrutiny of that is because people keep saying it will come good. Well, St Kilda's goal kicking hasn't come good for three seasons, and, you know, there are a litany of players across the competition whose goal kicking never comes good because they don't necessarily seize the moment and they haven't got great technique. And so, look, I hope that St Kilda is doing all the right things there, and I would have hoped that that would have included speaking to Matthew Lloyd about it. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are a bad kick for goal in their first and second years, and they're a bad kick for goal in their 10th and 12th.
Shea Bolton, before I let you go, Buzz, is he going to stay and what's he going to cost?
I think he's going to stay, but it's going to rise by the week. The issue is that Ralph Carr, his manager, would like him to stay, would like him to sign now. He's just told him that, you know, Richmond's the right club for him. Richmond absolutely want him to stay, but right now he's saying, no, I'm not doing anything. I'm waiting until the end of the year. Now, that is fine because it's just smart business for him. But what it does do is just raise the specter of a club coming in with that obscene offer, you know, that can't refuse offer. So, I don't know. We always talk about $800,000 players. Now, Richmond's probably offering him $550,000 to $600,000 for a couple of years. But if someone comes in with $1 million, because let's face it, what else is North Melbourne spending their money on? It just becomes, you know, a massive bridge gap. It's a really difficult gap to bridge. Now, probably he doesn't want to go to North Melbourne. And what Ralph's telling him is that, you know, you stay at a good club like Dusty Martin. You're marketable. You're on the big stage. You're getting the marquee of the year on, you know, on a Friday night rather than a Sunday twilight or a Saturday twilight even. But it just means that it's going to get just a little bit messy for the Tigers. So, yeah, for real, watch this one.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a great point. Are you Tuesday hacking today with Gareth?
Tuesday hacking, yes, with Courtney Walsh. She'll have very strong opinions about the withdrawal of Roger Federer.
Yes, yes. Well, he's got layered context opinions I saw yesterday on the socials.
A bit of nuance from Walsh. Yes. I will try and drag a very strong opinion out of Courtney Walsh.
Yes, so Mark Stevens wasn't overly approving of that stance. I'm sure you'll talk about that today. 800,000 or bust for Richmond for Shea Bolton. So see what you can do about that, Buzz. Look forward to reading about it in the Herald Sun, seeing you on Fox Footy and listening a little bit later on the Tuesday Hacks with Gareth.
Thank you very much. Fine, gentlemen.
John Ralph. He's everywhere, that man. He's everywhere. Reminder, early mail today is a place all up with Troy Corson going for 5 on the bounce. Race 3, number 4. Race 7, number 4. Race 8, number 3. And we've even got a best for you tomorrow at sale for Troy. Race 4, number 6. 3, 4, 7, 4, 8, 3 place. 4, 6 tomorrow at sale.
And that horse tomorrow is around about the sort of 480.
Ooh. Market.